An estimated 40 to 70% of caregivers live with depression, anxiety, or both, according to the Family Caregiver Alliance. And a study by the American Association of Geriatric Psychiatry reports that nearly 20% of adults aged 55 and older experience a mental health condition, including cognitive impairments or mood disorders. With the expected population of adults 65 and older expected to reach 80 million by 2045, there is a clear need to address better access to improve mental health services. Through the Insights Initiative, part of the California-based SCAN Community Service Program, Independence at Home, social workers and family therapists used evidence-based practices to treat depression, anxiety, distress, grief, loneliness, and other symptoms in seniors in their home and in their primary language. Senior producer Liz Siegert recently spoke with Denise LeCarve, Vice President of Independence at Home, about this innovative approach to delivering behavioral health services to seniors and their caregivers.
Let's explain to our audience exactly what Independence at Home is, because it's more than actually one program.
Absolutely. Independence at Home is a traditional social service model agency rooted in Long Beach, California. We started here 40 years ago and actually are the roots what became SCAN Health Plan and then came SCAN Foundation later. The story goes 40 years ago, a bunch of seniors got together here in the Long Beach area and said health care for seniors isn't very great, and we need to do more, things need to be more senior-focused. And the very first contract that they landed before they decided to create a health plan and grow beyond was a nursing home diversion contract here in California. It was a pilot back in 1977 where they said, okay, seniors should not be forced into nursing homes. They should be able to get assistance in the community. And that contract is still here today inside Independence at Home and serves as the roots of the organization. We've built out Independence at Home to be a broader set over the years. So if you think about a continuum, we have something under our roof for every senior and or their caregiver in order to help them remain independent and in the community, which is where everybody wants to be. Nobody wants to go to a nursing home. So we have everything from an 800 line that people can get information and assistance just trying to navigate senior services. We also have in-home behavioral health services, medication assistance, and we have an array of case management programs for either the caregiver or the senior where we can actually go in their home, assess their needs with them, and develop a care plan in order to help them remain healthy and independent. We also have a volunteer program where we pair volunteers with seniors who are isolated to help try to either bring them out or bring them socialization if they are homebound. And we also do provide small grants to other service providers in the area. So we do a kind of a whole array of supporting the safety net out there and delivering services across that safety net to any senior and or their caregiver.
And one of the programs that particularly got me was this Insights Initiative, which is behavioral mental health. How vital is that to older adults?
You see all of the news about the healthcare system is trying to wrap their arms around seniors and the cost of care and being able to, you know, decrease the types of things that are in their road now. Social services has been doing that for many years. I mean, healthcare is realizing that there's a cost tied to it. Mental health is in the middle of it all. We all have mental health needs, but seniors in particular, often the healthcare system, the traditional way of reaching out to them, has missed a large segment of the population. The fact is 20% of people age 55 and older are experiencing some type of mental health issue, and that number grows as they age. Most common is depression, anxieties, cognitive and mood disorders, and if you think of aging and the changes going on in society, around you, your own body, possibly economically going on around you, it makes sense that these kinds of things are coming up and they're having to deal with it. What happens a lot of times, though, is the healthcare system, the interventions that might be available to, either they misidentify it because they'll look at other medical conditions and treat those, or the interventions that are out there is not one, they're only one size fits all, meaning that senior needs to get themselves to a mental health clinic somewhere in the city, but they might not have adequate transportation. They might have a language barrier. They might be not be able to get there. Mm-hmm. So, or the other end of it might be is that the intervention of, but might be just telephonic. Well, if the senior is hard of hearing, telephonic isn't really even going to work, even with amplification devices, to really be able to work with them. So we really identified this hole there, that there's a segment of the population that just doesn't fit into the one-size-fits-all, or there's just not enough services there. And that's from our roots of being in the community. And it really raised on our radar of not only as a healthcare initiative and trying to be able to figure out interventions for mental health needs for seniors that will fit to, and help them be able to manage better and stay independent in the community, but being able to overcome the barriers to even accessing services by creating a modality that's in the home.
And when it comes to things like mental health, behavioral health, there's often a stigma surrounding that, especially among people of a certain generation or certain cultural backgrounds. So how does this program help overcome those kind of barriers?
Well, the first thing is, our motto is, no, depression is not normal part of aging. Because that is one of the first things you'll hear, oh, they're getting older, so depression's normal. No, it is not. And you're absolutely right. There's all these barriers. Some of them are culturally, and some of them, they are language barriers as well, or just educational levels. So we do a lot of that education in the community. Insights, the behavioral health program that we developed, we are targeting different communities here that are in our area that are giving us access to be able to educate and change that thinking. One, it's okay to ask for help. Two, it's okay to talk about your problems. It's actually very healthy to do. And three, it actually can build your quality of life. So we educate on those realms within the community. Our services are available in Spanish, Korean, Vietnamese, and obviously English as well. And we're looking to actually expand to Cambodian in the near future because there's a large population as well. And so our tactic there has been, if we can get out there in their language and be able to lower those stigmas and remove some of those barriers one person at a time, we'll be able to help them change that trajectory and feel better. Because at the end of the day, nobody wants to be depressed or anxious. They want to feel better.
Mm-hmm. This is very different from what a program like Medicare or even Medicaid might offer. What are the differences in what we might think of as a traditional health plan?
So traditional health plans, you manage care has to manage costs. And so a lot of times they're looking for the interventions. They've also got hundreds of thousands of people usually enrolled with them that they have to meet the needs of them. So their interventions are not necessarily population specific. Some managed care organizations obviously have people, they're serving children all the way through older adults. So when they think of their investment into this type of area, they have to think a little more broadly. So a lot of times managed cares will use telephonic services and will contract out the services to organizations that promise to bring therapists into the home via telephone. Problem is, it's the bandwidth is one of those things. One of the issues with that is bandwidth, mm-hmm. because a lot of times it's even hard for them to find therapists that speak the right language. For instance, we have a client that came to us who could have probably done okay with telephonic intervention, but spoke Spanish, and the wait list for a Spanish-speaking therapist was 7 months. Well, the issue that this senior was dealing with was her husband just died, and she was in a grief spiral, and she couldn't wait 7 months to work on her grief because it was impacting her ability to live today in the community. So the system isn't blind to it. It's just the way the system is designed that the interventions that are available are more of a wide swathing, and people are trying to fit into it. And a lot of people are accessing it, not necessarily seniors at that moment. It could be anyone in their healthcare system. When you think of community mental health, like departments of behavioral health, and like here in California, a lot of their clinics are really geared to the persistently mentally ill. So there's wait lists to get into those programs as well, and the people that get the higher the priority obviously are the much higher acuity. And this is just it's not that the system is trying to do harm in any way. It's just working with what you have and trying to figure out the best way to get there. And we're really behind the times in figuring out how to serve everybody. So our program really did zero in, and the research we've done is we want to make a difference and show, hey, here's an area you can go into. As a resource of last resort, we always try to utilize what the senior has available to them. But if there's barriers like language, like access, we're going to see them. We're going to treat them in their space. And then we're measuring the results from that treatment. And what we hope to do is publish this this year in order to show other providers to start thinking a little, that you can think a little bit differently about how you can reach certain segments of your population, especially around seniors.
And speaking of that research, you recently presented a study or a poster, top-level findings from a study at the American Geriatric Society conference. Can you talk about that a little bit and what you found?
Yes. So we've been doing this program an evidence-based model in partnership with Dr. Sue Borson at the University of Washington as our principal researcher for a little over 2.5 years. And what we did is we implemented treatment modalities and got all the staff trained using treatment protocols. And our goal was to figure out which treatment protocols worked best with seniors and then measuring the results along the way. And so what we were able to find is, although we didn't do a randomized clinical trial, our results are comparable to a clinical trial in terms of on the two major markers, PHQ-9 and for depression and geriatric anxiety scale. We were able to move people from an average of a moderate level of impact down to a mild level of impact over a 6-month treatment process using licensed social workers and or licensed marriage family therapists going into the home. And so we were very happy to see that it works, a focused, structured treatment intervention. Mostly the most impact was for mostly the moderate depressed. When you get into more major depressions and major anxieties, there's usually a lot more going on there. And so this is not a one-size-fits-all model. This really is for what we found in our research. And we didn't think it was, but we really did find that our hypothesis was if you can get in there in the earlier stage before the depression is either progressed to severe levels, where you do need a lot more medication management to intervene, a lot more psychiatry work, is we were able to move that needle with them in terms of and staving off them sliding any further along the depression and anxiety scales. And then a third measure we used that'll be in our when we publish is we also used a validated quality of life measure, and we measured it pre and post. And we saw people shift significantly in their self-reporting of improved quality of life. We also saw the anecdotal, where we saw people who were hiding at home because they were just so paralyzed, get back out to church and socializing with their friends. Which lends to quality of life.
The socialization part, as we all know, is very important to good health. Is this something that could be replicated in other communities?
We do believe so. That's why we want to publish and get the word out there. And so we've actually seen, this is not the first poster session we've done. We've done a couple at some other conferences as well, like the American Society on Aging. And there you had that audience was a lot more clinical social workers and gerontologists who are actually at the ground level seeing patients one-on-one in their homes in the community. And we saw from across the country, our session was packed, and we had people in there. How do we set this up for ourselves? Because this is such an unmet need, and we're all scratching our heads trying to figure out how can we make a difference. Because with the chronic conditions, the slide starts and the slide is down. And if we can intervene and put some more mild interventions in before they get to the point that they're at complete despair and everything's in chaos, because it's so much harder to provide to make difference at that stage. You're just doing crisis management at that stage. Mm-hmm. But we definitely believe it is transportable, and that even existing mental health providers could easily take and put the structure to their models. A lot of times in typical clinical only like mental health environments, they have models they use, but they don't hold themselves accountable to the models. One of the key things that we did here is we held the therapists you know, we didn't want to take away from the therapeutic alliance that happens in any kind of counseling, but we also kept a really strong eye on when the therapist might be okay wanting to keep them in a little bit longer. And then we would ask the questions, why, if are they progressing at all? Is there a really valid reason to? And if having a structured approach to really ask the questions on, is this making a difference, or do they need to go deal with other chronic conditions or social issues before they can focus on treatment, helps to really keep the focus and the needle moving forward. It's very easy with working with seniors, because things can change very rapidly, especially health-wise, to find yourself in a situation where the therapy might not be making a difference, but it's hard to say, let's step back a moment and let's have you focus on what you can work on right now, which might need to be your health. And so we've really, by focusing this and that alliance with the client, saying, okay, we're going to call a pause if other things start to take over your road, and we'll help you get to other services like case management or other resources if whether it's social issues or chronic health issues that are coming up, we'll definitely help you with that. But we really want to focus on the treatment here to move you along that and give you better coping strategies for all of these things in your life.
And if you have a better frame of mind, obviously your whole outlook on managing your physical health will be better too.
Absolutely. If you have a strategy to deal when those crises come up, it's going to be a lot easier to get through it versus staring it down and not knowing what to do.
Now, one of the other things you mention in the research are the family caregivers, who also have often significant anxiety, depression, stress, and don't really have either good coping skills or say, oh, I don't have time to deal with it now, I just have to take care of mom or dad. What kind of strategies do you use for them?
So caregiving is one of the, I always say, is one of the toughest jobs in life, because a lot of it is the family, right, who is having to work sometimes a day job and take care of mom and dad and possibly even take care of their own children. Research shows that physical, emotional, and mental health issues such as depression with caregivers, there are actually 40 to 70% of caregivers are impacted on a regular basis by these types of feelings that get in the way of their ability to function. And it's just kind of assumed the family takes care of the senior, but the families need care themselves. They can't neglect themselves. So we actually, when we set out to do this, welcomed them enrolling. And we found a barrier to a lot of caregivers is they might have health insurance from somewhere, but they just have no time, as you just mentioned. They're stressed. They're going thing to thing, their job, taking care of mom, raising their children, all of these things that taking a time out, whether it is to try to access a mental health clinic or pick up a phone and talk to somebody, one, time is of the essence. Two, that's just an extra step for them. So our goal was to see, could we make a difference with caregivers by saying, look, we'll come to the house. We'll come to where you're caring with mom, for mom and dad. You don't have to leave there. We can talk to you. We can also talk to you while you're in action, and bringing these same modalities. And we found the same results. We found that once they could stop for a moment and acknowledge that they needed some help because they were overwhelmed by their depression and their anxiety, and by going into the home, we moved the needle similarly. The results were very, very close and very similar to the older adults by just having that focused intervention right there at their fingertips. And sometimes, you know, and they could say when and where. It was us adapting to them and saying, here you go. Here is our service. So it's the same modalities and moving them along as well for better coping strategies.
Now, obviously all this costs money.
Yes.
We don't have a great long-term care plan on a national level, and we certainly don't have a good mental health care plan on a national level. How do we get the resources into the communities if they're outside of the Long Beach area and other social workers, other therapists want to try and implement something like this?
So that's a great question, because there is not enough money to fund all the needs in the safety net anywhere for seniors. I think I start at the bottom and I move up. So starting at the grassroots level, at the community level, a lot more community, so they're hidden, but there's a lot of organizations around in counties and certain cities that have some level of therapeutic interventions going on. A first place of starting is getting them educated on an approach where they, if a focused approach of intervention like we've done here with the modalities and doing them over a regimented period of time could very much streamline their ability to focus in on those patients, move those patients along, and move the new patients in. So one thing that doesn't cost money is getting your staff. It takes time, but bringing your staff together and everybody being on the same page to, we're going to serve this way and we're going to document this way, and really a strategic approach to how you currently function. From there, it does start costing, the cost does start coming into the system, because when you build something, you want to grow it. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity in healthcare right now, especially in states that are doing coordination of care and really working on bringing together the Medi-Medi population and the long-term services and supports around the country. And you see a lot of these synergies. These community-based organizations, a lot of them are already talking to health plans in their area and medical groups in their area, because those health plans and medical groups are needing them in order to fulfill serving the whole person under things like the duals demonstration. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's opportunity to bring this part to the table.
And as far as GAN Foundation's plan to bring this program out themselves, or, you know, expand it into other parts of California, is that in the works?
So on the foundation is not going to expand it. SCAN Health Plan is looking at ways to bring it to other counties in California. Right now, I do have therapists that are working in the Los Angeles County area and Orange County area. We are looking to move towards the Inland Empire, Riverside, and San Bernardino. You know, these are different counties here in Southern California. They're counties of very great need, high levels of seniors, and especially in the Riverside and San Bernardino area, it's a very widespread. Services are spread out, not easy to access. So we are looking at plans to expand one county at a time and be able to bring these services further.
And if somebody was interested in finding out more, whether they're based in California or not, if they wanted to take these concepts and bring them to their own community, how can they get more information?
So they're welcome to go to, they can contact us anytime. Independenceathome.org is actually our website for our community-based services. So through that, they could send an email to talk to us. They can contact me as well. Happy to link them up with our staff, if depending on their questions, or myself for the macro kinds of questions, in order to think through a new way of approaching behavioral health.
Wonderful. Denise, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
That was Senior Producer Liz Siegert speaking with Denise Likhar of SCAN about Insights, a new initiative which addresses mental health needs among older adults in the community.